Stopped.
Okay, we lost a few minutes, but okay, I'll try that again. I don't know what happened. But anyway, so we lost 10 minutes this year. That's fine. It was just reading through the Gemara. So he says, Amr Le, so he said, then on what merit should I support you? Amr Le, Parnaseni Kichelav Ukhe'orev. He said, what, a starving animal came to you? You wouldn't give them food? Give me food too. So Parnasse, he bought it and he gave him food. He bought that. He bought the argument. Not the food. He bought the argument. But then, Batar Dinafak, then Rabbi Yonazam and Amram left. Yosef Rebbe become its star, and Rebbe regretted giving him food. Va'amar, oi li shenatati piti lamaret. He said, oi, I gave bread to an amaret. Yonatan ben Amram. So Amar Lefanav Rav Shimon Berebi, Shema Yonatan ben Amram Tamidechahu. He said, you didn't give it to an Amaret. It was probably Yonatan ben Amram. She'ena Rochel, Anna Mikavo Tarami Yamav. And he didn't want to be supported because he was a Talmud Chacham. But Kuva Ashkach, they looked into it and it turned out it was right. It really was Yonatan ben Amram. And Amar Rebbe Yichnazu Hakol, and that's what convinced Rebbe to say, okay, you know what, let everybody come in, because maybe they're hiding Talmidei Chachamim who don't want the honor of Talmidei Chachamim, so I'll feed them. Exactly. And then the Gemara says, and why was Rebbe so insistent? Rebbe L'taymei, the Amar Rebbe, Ein Paranut Bala Olam Ela Bishvil Amei Aretz. Rebbe did this because he said, all bad that comes to the world only happens because of Amei Aretz. Like that tax that they once put on the people in Tveria. So they asked Rebbe, they said, let the rabbis contribute to the tax. So he said, lo. Absolutely not. So the Amei Aretz said, arokinan. Then we're going to run away, so we don't have to pay the tax. Aroku. He said, be my guest. So Arku, Palgeon, they ran away. So what happened? Dalyu Palga, the king lowered the tax by 50%. Atu Hanu Palga came to Rebbe. The next half of the Amei Aretz came to Rebbe. Amarle, Leit V'Rabban Bahadon, let the rabbis contribute their fair share. Amarle, lo. Absolutely not. Arokinan, so he said, we'll run away. And he said, Aroku, be my guest, run away. Arku, Kulu, Pashahu Koves. So they all ran away except for one laundryman. Shadyu Akoves. The king said, the laundryman has to pay everything. Arak Koves. So that laundryman ran away. Paka Klila, at which point the king canceled the tax. So Amar Rebbe, so Rebbe said, aha, re'itam, this proves, she'ein paranut bala olam ela b'shvil Amei Aretz, that all bad things in the world only happen because of the Amei Aretz. Yes. So this is the Gemara. That is the Amud of Gemara, which we ran through just so you got the whole picture. Yaakov has this look at his face. Okay. Now I want to go back and I want to analyze the Gemara. Okay, this is the goal. So, first things first. The first argument that the Gemara puts forth, which is that the rabbis don't pay for the wall because Rabbanan lo tzrichei netiruta. Okay, analyze that argument for me. Yes. No psukim yet. I want you just to, if you stopped in the Gemara at that point, what would you say that what the argument is? Good, so push it farther for me. Therefore, so what does that tell us about taxation? Very good. Right? Very simple. At that stage in the Gemara seems to introduce the notion that the fundamental standard by which we gauge who pays taxes or why you pay taxes is, do you need it? Does this comport with what we know from the previous stage in the Gemara that we saw on Thursday?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Right? Because there the Gemara assumed that, let's be very careful, what did the Gemara assume there? That everybody needs security, but the people closer to the wall need it a little bit more, the people on the inside need a little bit less, so everyone pays, but you pay based on how much you need it. And then the Gemara tried to figure out, is it based on location, is it based on how much money you have, is it based on how many people? But the Gemara's fundamental assumption is that what obligates you is need. As long as you need it somewhat, then you have to pay something, and then we have to figure out how much. And therefore, if you were to identify a group of people that doesn't need a particular tax at all, then they wouldn't need to pay it. So security, the rabbis don't need. Rabbis, no need to pay. Do we agree that if I stopped at this stage in the Gemara, just froze, and nothing else existed in the Gemara, that this is what I would have learned in this Gemara? Yes. Now, let me open it up. What bothers you about that Gemara? And I am happy for you to throw at me. I want you to throw at me everything that bothers about that. I want you to throw me. Let me just tell you what I want you to throw at me. I want you to tell me what bothers you about the Gemara textually. I want you to tell me what bothers you in this Gemara theologically. I want you to throw into this Gemara what bothers you morally. I want you to throw internal questions, external, everything. And we will do what we can to answer them. Yeah. Okay. Let's go this way. Yaakov, Yonatan, Ezra, go. Okay, good. So Yaakov's point is, the entire assumption that the Gemara seems to be based on, which is that you pay for a tax that you need, seems to ignore the possibility of communal responsibility, right? The notion that we all need it, sorry, people in society need it, and therefore everyone should pay for it. How do we deal with that being the clear implication, and does the Gemara really believe that in all circumstances? Good. Yonatan. Go ahead.
If somebody, if a person lives in Hudson, and there was a need for a wall, which everybody was interested in working like, you know, if this person built a wall around his own property, that he had no need for that wall, but he obligated to that tax for that wall. So you have to put a wall in the city.
You could argue, I guess, based on this, potentially not, right? Meaning, if we really took this out of soap, right, you could say that if someone built, you know, had a private militia around his house, I don't know who I could be thinking of. Yeah. Correct. Correct.
And then there wouldn't be enough funding to build the wall.
Correct. Very good. So this is two questions. One is going back to Yaakov's problem, right? But expanding on it. Yeah, Ezra.
So this is partially in response to Yaakov's
problem. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like part of it is that we're the idea of here is that when talking about taxes, it's that whenever like people get together to something they all benefit from, and therefore can benefit from it, and you have to contribute towards it. But beyond that, where the place of you paying in order to help people at large is DACA. So there is a place for that. My question would be, could you like fulfill a portion of your DACA obligation by donating to a communal fund? Like, let's say there's a wall in fund.
Right, so you'd have to ask, right, could we say that maybe there's a value to paying even if we can't force you, and we'll see that the line between taxes and stucca is going to get complicated later in the Gemara when we get to the Kupa and Tamchoi. At this stage, it doesn't sound like this is a stucca, right?
Also, most of
our
problems are like
the Pesukim were
very
good. Okay, so good. We'll come back to the Pesukim. Before we get to the localized ones, are there any other major questions in this Gemara? I have a lot. Yeah. Okay, good. Very good. So Yaakov has a problem with, And I think we have to, okay, I think we at least have to put it on the table, right? Is I think for a lot of us looking at this Gemara, it just rubs us the wrong way, right? Especially once you get to Rebbe's story, right? Where will not feed the Amei Aretz, right? Do you really have that type of superiority complex? Okay. I want you not to be afraid to put that on the table. We're allowed to put this on the table. Okay? That's why it's important to understand this Gemara. Okay? To understand what's going on here. That's what it's really telling us. Yeah. Very good. Is this true? Or let me broaden it. Right? The way the Chazon Ish puts it, which is, and I have a whole article just on the Chazon Ish. There's a theological problem here, which is, really? Meaning, what happened to, like, even if you believe, like, metaphysically God protects you, but really, like, are we throwing Hishtadlus into the garbage? Do we really think, like, what? Right? Meaning, there does seem to be this very weird, this very weird perspective in the Gemara that, oh, like metaphysically, God protects Tamid HaChamim, and therefore they have no need to contribute to like the normal Hishtadlut that we put in for security. And isn't that weird theologically, right? Again, these are some things, the Chazon Ish is not like a radical, you know, free thinker, right? The Chazon Ish has this problem in the Sikha, right? Like, it is weird theologically. Right? There's the moral problem that Yaakov has, but there's also a theological problem, which is granted that this would be the case, right? Since when do we just say, but rely on a miracle that God will take care of you? Right? There are theological issues that seem to not cohere with the general view. That is a problem in this sugya. Again, this sugya is one of those sugyas. I want you to name the problems, because we will not understand it if you aren't honest and name how many issues there are, because there are a lot. Yeah. Ah, very good. Oh, very good. Very good. So, and Yonatan says, well, wait a second. We need to, if we're going to put this exemption, we've got to figure out who is the Talmud Chacham. And what? Very good. We have to say, well, aren't there cases that are not like this? But, and it's more than just that. I would say, we got to figure out what type of Talmud Chacham it is. Now, there's something else. Now, a textual issue right at the beginning, which is if I ask you, okay, what is the real issue here? Is it knowledge of Torah or is it something else? What might it be? What? Very good, right? The Gemara says Rabbanan lo tzrichin nitiruta, and it seems to be functioning on the level of chachma. Except, what phrase does the Gemara use it interchangeably with? At least the beginning of the Gemara, tzaddikim. So we've got to figure out. Wait a second. What is even the standard here? Is it chachma, or is it tzidkut? Right? What is it? Is this a religious thing? Right? Is this like a righteousness thing? Or is it something about Torah knowledge? Or both? Right? We have to know because the Gemara uses them interchangeably, but they're not usually interchangeable. Good. What else bothers you in this Gemara? Very good. Is that right? Ezra says, well, maybe there's right, in the Rebbe Gemara, there's a question of, I only want to feed Talmid HaChamim, or is it a precedence thing? That if I only have enough food, I'll give it to Talmid HaChamim. At first, it sounds like precedence, and maybe that's what it is. You have to wonder whether that's the case once he manages to open the storehouses to everybody. And, yeah, Yaakov. Very good. That the Gemara seems to start with one thesis, but then segues into a much more radical thesis, right? Which is rabbis don't need security, and therefore they're exempt from security tax. But by the end of the Gemara, he's making a different argument, which is that all bad things ever happen because of Amei Aretz, and therefore taxes, it's not that taxes are, it's not that they don't need it, it's that taxes are viewed as punishment, and bad things in the world happen because of Amei Aretz. That's why Talmid Chachamim are exempt. Now, that theological notion bothers Yaakov, but I also want to point out that there is a broad theological question here, which is, what are you talking about, right? There's also a local question, which I want to bring your attention to, which is, didn't the Gemara, without telling you, change its mind as to the argument it's even making, right? The first argument the Gemara made was, Talmidei Chachamim aren't obligated in security tax because Rabbanan lo tzrichei netiruta. By the end, the Gemara is talking about rabbis not being obligated any tax because bad things only happen because of Amei Aretz. Right? That is, and let me ask you a simple question which the Chazon Ish asks, which is, okay, in Rebbe's second story, it worked out well. When all the Amei Aretz left the city, the king took away the tax. But let me ask you a very simple question. What if he had not? Now all the Amorites had run away. Now the only people who live in this city are Talmidei Chachamim. It worked out well in the end, and Rebbe drew a very far-reaching theological conclusion from the fact that as soon as the Amorites ran away, the king removed the tax. But what if it hadn't happened? What if it had not happened? I want you to think about that question, leave it on the back burner, but that's the Chazon Ish's question, which is, what happens if you have a city which is literally only made of Talmidei Chachamim, so then what? Very good. Okay. Look, Reb Shechter once said, he says this a lot, actually, and it's a very biting, ironic comment, but is always heartwarming to me because it means that even serious Talmidei Chachamim can look critically at themselves. And he said, what is the proof that the rabbis have a sense of humor? The fact that the rabbis say, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam, right? It is, there's the ideal, and sometimes you just look around and you say, no, you have to be honest about what's going on. Okay, I need you. What? Fine. Okay, what else? What else bothers you in this Gemara? Come on, keep, what else? Very good. Very good, is that there does seem to be this weird thing that Rebbe, in the end of the day, gave the food to the Amorites, then regrets it, but then ends up doing it, right? And what exactly is the conclusion there, right? Because on the one hand, Yonatan ben Amram is a Talmud Chacham who convinces him to give him food, not as a Talmud Chacham, but then the conclusion Rebbe learned when he found out that he was a Talmud Chacham in hiding was, on the one hand, I'll give food to everybody, right? But his conclusion was, the reason I didn't want to is because Amorites are bad, and all bad things happen because of them. But in the end of the day, he fed them, so which was his conclusion, right? Was this like his Hava Amina, that he used to think that all Amorites were bad, and then, like, what exactly? Did he retract on that, or did he continue to think that all Amorites are bad and all bad things happen to them? It's just that you can't act on that because there might be hidden Talmidei Chachamim amongst the Amorites that you were discriminating against in your distribution of food, right? Like, what exactly is the conclusion? Yeah, very good. Adam. Oh, so right, that, the Gemara says, well, maybe he didn't want to benefit as a Talmud Chacham, right? He didn't want to, like, take advantage of the status of a Talmud Chacham, right? But Adam is right, but wait a second. If Rebbe is only giving food to Talmidei Chachamim, so is it, well, I'll sharpen it, is it that he fundamentally agreed with Rebbe that only Talmidei Chachamim deserve food, he just didn't want to benefit as Talmud Chacham, so he came up with some fake argument, oh, no, feed me like you would an animal, right? Or did he, like, on principle, disagree with Rebbe that Talmidei Chachamim, that other people should get food, right? And that's why he wasn't willing to take advantage of his status, because he thought that on principle, you shouldn't be only giving food to Talmid Chacham, right? Was this a localized thing? Like, he really agreed only Talmid Chacham should be getting food? He just didn't want to take advantage of his status? Or no. The fact that he goes through this whole charade is because, on principle, he disagrees with what's going on, right? Very good. Why don't you just investigate, right? Why, in the end of the day, was Rebbe's not solution to just say, look, I understand you don't want to take advantage of it, but really we shouldn't be giving food to Ami Aretz. Let's just do a better investigation. Why was his solution, forget it, I'll just open the doors and let anyone can come in, right? Was that, is that a retraction? Is it not a retraction? Is the Gemara, yeah, Ezra.
So can you say that, like the definition of how the Gemara was the before and after, is there that what he said by, like, that there may be
maybe, right? Maybe. Could be. It's definitely possible. Okay. Now, let's keep pushing. Okay? Let's keep pushing. If I ask you, so at the beginning of the Gemara, the Gemara says that the rationale for not charging the rabbi's security tax is Rabbanan lo tzirichin nitziruta. By the end, we get a much more far-reaching thesis, which is all bad things that ever happen in the world happen because of Ami Aretz. Are there other arguments that happen in this Gemara? Is there anything in the Gemara that fits neither thesis that we just said?
Yeah.
Very good. What? Say again?
Yeah, like,
oh, very good. So part of it is that not all the psukim seem to support these theses, right? And the proofs, right? That we're going to have to look at carefully, is do the proofs support the thesis? What else in the Gemara? What else in the Gemara doesn't fit? Yeah, very good. Tell me why. Okay, here's the case that really should really make the bells go off in your head, which is, the Gemara says, Talmidei Chachamim need water, and therefore they have to pay to dig cisterns. But if the way that the city deals with cisterns is not by collecting money and hiring people to do it, but is by taking human labor tax, right? Like, everyone should devote 3 hours a month to digging. So then, the Talmidei Chachamim are pater. Now, does that argument fit with the claim that we said, as Yonatan said, underlies Rabbanan Lo Tzirichin Nitziruta, which is you only pay taxes for the things you need, and they don't need security? No. Why does this not work there, Adam? Because they need the water. And therefore, under normal circumstances, they have to pay. But if the way that they go about getting water is not by charging people, but by having them work, so then rabbis don't normally go out to work, so they don't have to do it. What is that all about? Okay, why? Good, so maybe it's about time, but is that what the Gemara says? Is that what the Gemara says? What? Okay, it could be about time, but that's not to say what the Gemara says. What does the Gemara say? It's not the derech of the Talmidei Chachamim to go out and dig cisterns, right? Let's say what it isn't, and then we'll say what it is. Is that argument in any way connected to either argument one, which is Rabbanan lo tzirichin nitziruta, that they don't need security, or all bad things in the world happen because of Ami Aretz? Do either of those theses go do any work to explain that middle line in the Gemara? No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Right? Nothing does. It's because they're saying they need water, and if, therefore, you're allowed to charge them for it, but if the normal way of getting it done is having them dig, so then they don't have to do it. Right?
Yeah,
So that seems to be introducing something else. Now, it could be what Yonadan and Ezra are saying, that, well, you can tax them monetarily in a case where they need it, but not take of their time. Though, what does the Gemara actually sound like when it says it's not the way of Talmidei Chachamim to do this? They're not physical kavod. It's not kavod, right? Whatever it is, though, the Gemara seems to have sneaked another argument in without telling you that there's another argument, right? Meaning the Gemara has just introduced another reason why you might be patur from a tax, which is either because you can't tax their time or because you can't make them do things which are not in accordance with their honor, right? Whatever exactly is going on there is not the same as, it's not that they don't need it, they do need it, right? And then what do you have to ask conceptually? I mean, now you have to go back and say, is this a new principle that the Gemara is just introducing without telling us? Or does it tell us something about, right, is it another part of the discussion of Banalot V'Yechinu Tiruta that the Gemara snuck in? Yaakov Ezra. Very good. And Yaakov says, well, I don't understand. So maybe, why don't you just say, well, they need it, so they don't work. So, but we already said they need it, so why don't they pay someone to work? And that'll be, right? And then you won't be taking their time. Right? What exactly is this argument, Bichlal? Yeah, Ezra. Then Yonatan. What? Sounds like it. Yeah. It sounds like we can force them. Sounds like it. Okay, I mean, it sounds like it, because that's the context of Gemara, is what things can we force them, what things can we can. I mean, I guess you could say maybe it's optional, but it doesn't sound that way. Okay. We've been doing this for 27 minutes. Have we gotten out of our system all the questions that we need to ask on this sugya? Okay, so I'm asking you, are there any other? We'll obviously come to more, yeah. Right? But I want to get them out of your system. I want you to put them on the table. Yeah. Okay, good. So hold your thoughts for a second. Oh, we will. We just haven't finished the Gemara. We've only done an Amud and a plus of the Gemara. The Gemara keeps going. The Gemara will talk about food tax, right? Like, stucca taxes on food and tamkli and stuff like that. I mean, this is a tax not like to build a, like, you know, infrastructure essentially. Right? This isn't like water per se. It's the infrastructure that you need for water. It's like an aqueduct, right? Or it's like a modern, like, reservoir or something. What? Yeah. So the Tosefta goes into those. Shuls, Eruv, things like that. Yeah. Yaakov, Ezra. Well, what? What's the point of bringing in the orphans? Oh, because the orphans are also a group of people that you can't force to pay a lot of things because they're not chayav in mitzvos. So anything which is a mitzvah, they can't be forced to do yet, or their children. And it's not, they're not running their own estate, so we can only spend their money or in very minimal ways that keep them supported, right? There are a lot of things that we're limited on because until they are adults and can manage their own estate, we don't make them do it, right? And the chiddush is that even in cases where the yisomim are included, mm-hmm. which is not a given, tamid yichamim are sometimes excluded, right? It's like a, yeah.
Was this like a really, really bad payment, or was it like a people just...
I don't know.
Correct,
right? So Ezra's saying, how bad was this famine? Are they really saying they're letting the Amir Aretz starve? That sounds bad. That sounds, I mean, the Gemara might sound scary, but that sounds really bad. Yes. Okay, good. So with all of that, half an hour of all your questions out in the open on this sugya. So now Ezra. Since Ezra wants to do this on the Psukim, let's return to the Gemara carefully and read it. So the Gemara offers several proofs for this notion that Talmidei Chachamim don't need to be protected and therefore don't need to pay for security tax. Does every proof that the Gemara offers actually prove that thesis in the way it's presented? How many people vote yes? What? Okay, good. Two questions. Gavi's question. Do any of them support that thesis? And even if some of them do all of them? Right? So, let's start with the minimal. Do all of them support the thesis? So I see a consensus of saying, do all of these proofs support the thesis that the reason that the Chachamim are Patur is because they don't need security? Do all the Psukim seem to point in that direction? No. Okay, we seem to have consensus on that. Do any of them? Okay, good. Some of them might. Very good. Okay, good. So, now I want you to understand why I'm asking this, not just to be, right, to annoy you, but remember, I asked you very specifically. I said, the Gemara later on, the case of the water cisterns, seems to out of nowhere introduce a totally another principle, right? Once you have that, you should start looking for the possibility that that didn't come out of nowhere, right? And if, in fact, the Gemara brings psukim that don't immediately lend themselves to being the rationale for Rabbanan lo tzricha nitziruta, so methodologically, we might say, well, we have psukim that don't seem to prove what they are meant to prove, and we have an argument that Gemara pulls out of nowhere that seems to be unrelated to the first thesis. Maybe those are connected phenomena, right? Phenomena. Maybe there are, in fact, other principles, and these psukim the Gemara claims it's pulling out to prove one thesis, in fact, are introducing another thesis that the Gemara, without telling you, then concludes, right? So this might be important for us. Okay, so let's go through the proofs. So the first proof is from, let's go through all of them. Let's see how many we get through. The first proof comes from Tehillim Kof Lamed Tet, right? So I hope everyone, as I said, try looking these up in the Psukim. Did you look it up? So Tehillim Kof Lamed Tet. Okay, so the psukim in Tehillim Kof Lamed Tet. What is the perek talking about? God's infinite thoughts. So plausibly, it's talking about the people who are attempting to know God's infinite thoughts. So Talmidei Chachamim, maybe plausibly. Fine, maybe. So then, in the actual pasuk that the Gemara invokes, so what does the pasuk mean? Right, so the pasuk says, right, I count them, they exceed the grades of sand, I end, but I am still with you. So the Gemara says, okay, these Tzaddikim are like the sand of the sea. Their masim tovim protect them like the sand protects the sea. Right? That was the Gemara's drasha.
Right.
So, first of all, this is clearly a drasha. The pshat has nothing to do with God protecting Talmidei Chachamim because of their masim tovim. Oh, fine. I'm willing to take that. It's not pshat. Fine. Even within the drash, though, what thesis does it support? Even within the drash, right? Good. So God is going to destroy the enemies, and who is He going to protect? Good. So here's the first proof, even in the drasha, right? Like, you could read the psukim that it's about Talmidei Chachamim. But Yonatan's right. It sounds like it's not really about Talmidei Chachamim being protected. It's about Tzadikim being protected. Now, besides for Pshat in the Psukim, what else might push you in the direction that the real issue here is not Chachma, but Sidkut? Right? So, yes, in the Psukim it talks about Maaseh, and there's also a very good proof, which is? Come on, more obvious, more obvious, more obvious. The Gemara, in its own drasha, says, Tzadikim. Meaning, the Gemara, I want to point out to you that the Gemara says it's bringing a proof to prove Talmidei Chachamim, then brings a pasuk that seems to be talking about Tzadikim, and itself refers to them as Tzadikim, and it says what protects them? The Maaseim, their actions, and not their Chachma. So the first thing that should start, right, telling you that this Gemara is very different than it seems, is that the first proof to the Gemara's thesis that Talmidei Chachamim don't need protection is a pasuk that talks about Tzadikim, that the Gemara itself interprets to mean Tzadikim, and it says not that their Torah is protecting them, but their good deeds are protecting them. So now you've got to figure out, so why is that the case? What possibilities are you left with at that stage in the Gemara? Before you ask a different question, answer my question, then you can ask your question. At this stage of the Gemara, right, this is a problem. So therefore, what possibilities are left open? Right, so one is that it never meant Talmid Chacham, it always meant Tzaddik. What's the problem with that? So it says Talmid Chacham throughout, and at the end of the Gemara, it clearly contrasts Talmidei Chacham with Amei Aretz, with people who've learned and people who have not. Right? I understand. So possibility one is that it never meant Talmid Chacham, it meant Tzaddik. Problem in the Gemara is that it calls them Talmidei Chacham, and the end in the Rebbe's story, it clearly is contrasting those who have learned Torah and those who have not. That is a very big theological question. Okay, very good. So another possibility is what Ezra's saying, right? Is to say, no, it really does mean Talmid Chacham. It means, what it really means is Tzaddik. The problem is it's hard to quantify Tzaddik. So a Tzaddik who manifests his Tzidkut through, being a Talmid Chacham, so that makes sense, right? So maybe that's what it means. But really it means Tzaddik. That's another possibility. Give me a third possibility. It really means Talmid Chacham, but if a Talmid Chacham is not also a Tzaddik, then he's not really a Talmid Chacham. Right? So a third possibility is a hybrid, which is it's not enough to be a Tzaddik. Right? You have to be a particular type of a Tzaddik. You have to be a Talmid Chacham. But let's say someone knew Kol HaTorah Kula but was a Rasha, so then he would not be exempt. Right? Because how could he be exempt? Right? It's not enough to know Torah. Torah may be a necessary but not sufficient. Right? So we have three possibilities, which is really it only means Tzaddik, not Talmid Chacham. It only means Talmid Chacham and not a regular Tzaddik. Or it means Talmid Chacham, but knowledge of Torah may be a necessary but not sufficient requirement for this Gemara. Yes, Jonathan. No. Mm. Okay. Isn't that part of what we're asking here? Yeah, right? I mean, that question might underlie it here, yeah?
Oh, but isn't also a hard interpretation to make out of the actual fear that it's talking about anything but God's
Yes. Yeah, I said leave aside the pshat. Let's talk about the drasha. Fine? But do you understand why I think it's important to look at the drasha? Because suddenly look, the psukim and everything gets more complicated, not just that it's not pshat, but even within the drasha, even if I accept the drasha, the standard that the Gemara says this proves something about Talmidei Chachamim and then moves directly to Tzaddik and about his Masim Tovim and not about his Torah. There are other Gemaras that talk just about Torah. So for example, let me give you a Gemara that would have made sense here, but which is pointedly not here. Okay, the Gemara in Chagiga tells the following story. After, at some point, the daughter of Acher, right, who's Acher? The infamous, right, the infamous Tana who goes off the Derech. So his daughter comes to Rebbe and says, give me food. And she says, and he says, why should I give you food? Well, my father was Acher, but your father was a Rasha. He says, yeah, but he was a Talmud Chacham. And a Bosco comes out to agree with her, right? And Rebbe said, if to those who knew Torah and were mevazeit, they deserve such respect, kal vachomer to talmidei chachamim who maintain, right, their good standing. Now, in that Gemara, it's clear what makes her deserving of her of support. Talmud chacham, to the exclusion of being a tzaddik, right? So that would have made sense with the claim of Rabbanan lo tzrichini tiruta. But the Gemara doesn't do that. Well, no, my point is that Gemara like that. It's not about protection, but I'm saying...
I'm saying, Mark, is there anything actually about protection that they just called? I think that's the reason why they say you should have done this one, because
you like,
this
is only true for but... I'm saying the fact that it doesn't pull a move like that might indicate something. That's exactly my point, right? Is that the Gemara, for all it's talking about Talmud Chacham, goes out of its way to pick something about Tzaddik.
In
Achanami, but that should be telling. My point is that, right, the Gemara doesn't seem to blink when it moves from Talmud Chacham to Tzaddik, which should give us pause.
I mean, but it seems that it does,
and
it's saying, why
did you put this one instead? Right, I'm saying, but it should be telling, right? I'm not saying this is like, it should have done, I'm saying it's telling that it doesn't, what? My point is that the fact that the Gemara starts by saying Talmud Chacham and then seamlessly goes to Tzaddik, rather than taking cases in Shas where there does seem to be a preference for a Talmud Chacham even if he's not a Tzaddik, seems to tell us about what is really going on here. Right? Okay. What about the pasuk from Shir HaShirim? Ani choma v'shadai kemigdalot, which again, yes, I understand, has nothing to do with it in Shas. I get it. But the whole story is metaphorical. Right? It's a love story which is metaphorical, so fine. Yes. Great. Right, so... Now, in this Gemara, right, the way the Gemara takes this drasha, does it have anything to do with security? No, it does. The way the Gemara takes it. Yeah? Is ani choma. Is that I, whoever the pasuk is talking about, am like a wall, and therefore, I need no other wall. Right? Does the Gemara offer any proof that it's about a Talmud Chacham? No. Okay. But it interprets it that way. What else does it interpret it, though, as? It might be about Knesset Yisrael, all Jews. Right? So it already, right, the Gemara, on the one hand, the first drasha, even if you don't love the drasha, but what is it saying? Tamid chama like a choma. But then what does the Gemara do, which undermines its own argument? Yes, it could be all Jews. Right? Which means that the Gemara itself offers two options and says it's a machloket about whether you think, who is this choma? Tamid chamim or all Jews. So the Gemara itself already acknowledges, yes, someone is being protected and might not need security, but note that it's not clear that those people are only Talmidei Chachamim. It might really be everybody. Which, of course, asks the question, then why does anyone have to pay for a wall? Which gets back to Aristotle's question, which gets back to all that, right? But you understand, the Gemara itself brings the drasha and then complicates the picture immediately. Yes, Ezra. They are the protectors.
Yeah, they're already...
Ah, very good. And now Ezra notes that even within that, the Gemara seems to be making a different argument, which is, The first Gemara's argument the Gemara makes is the rabbis don't need protection. And this thesis actually seems to be stronger, which is, why don't the rabbis need protection? Because they are the ones protecting, right? Those are also, as Ezra correctly points out, those are two different arguments. One which is, rabbis don't need protection, therefore they don't need it. The other is, very good, that they're already contributing to security, and that's really what it means. Now, let's go back to Yaakov before we get to Yonadan. Yaakov asked before, and he said, wait a second, how is this Gemara fair? Right? Why do rabbis not have to pay their fair share? Right? But if you read this drasha carefully, maybe this Gemara is making a different argument, which is not that they don't have to pay their fair share. It's that everyone is contributing to security. When we say Rabban lo tzrichin itziruta, we don't mean they don't need and they can't be forced to pay for other people. It's they are already contributing to security, and that's what the drasha means, which is a totally different argument, because one argument, wait one second. One second. I want you to think about what just happened. If you take the first argument, Rabbanan lo tzrichin itziruta, so leave aside what it says about Talmidei Chachamim. What is the argument it's making about taxes? You can only pay if you need it, and there's no idea of communal contribution to things you don't need. Right? That was Yaakov's problem with the Gemara. But Ezra's Medayek, that this drasha doesn't actually say that. This drasha sounds like the reason Talmidei Chachamim don't need to pay for security taxes is not because they don't need security, but because they're providing security. Now, there's still the theological problem, which is, why are we really allowed to trade theological security for physical security? Fine, we'll get to the theological problem. But it could be that if you read the Gemara carefully, that the Gemara is now, Ezra's deal with the drasha is a response to Yaakov's moral problem, which is, how could it be that even if you admit that Talmidei Chachamim don't need security, does the Gemara have no notion of communal responsibility where I have to contribute to things because the community needs it, even though I personally don't? If Ezra's diuk is correct, so this is a moral response to Yaakov, which is, you misunderstand. We're not saying that Talmidei Chachamim are exempt because they don't need it. What we're saying is everyone needs to contribute. Some people contribute by putting in money, and some people contribute by metaphysically protecting the city. Now, that leaves open a theological question, but it answers Yaakov's moral question, which is if Ezra Zeuk is right, the Gemara's response is everyone has to contribute to everything in society. It's just that not everybody has to contribute in the same way, right? Which is a totally different argument. But you understand? I want you to just pay attention to this before you ask your question. I want you to realize that The reason I'm telling you have to read the drasha very carefully is because the Gemara only made X number of explicit arguments. And yet, if you read the Gemara's drasha carefully, you realize that the argument it seems to be making that it never spells out doesn't seem to be the argument it opened with. And that forces us, when we get to figuring out, well, what argument is it actually making? Halacha, you've got to go back and figure out, okay, what do the drasha tell us about the legal claims and theological and moral claims that are actually being made? And that's not clear. Okay, Yonatan, Ezra. Okay, yes?
I have a problem. Is it possible to say that, first of all, this is what is the same what is rather should be, and that the law is actually for people and legal authorities to come, in that all the people should be protected when they're coming. And that's why
Maybe. But the Gemara does seem to put them at odds, right? Because Gemara says this is, right, Rish Lakish was not holding this, right? So it sounds like it's a machloket rather than synthesized. I don't know. It's possible. Yeah. I mean, what you say may be possible later in the Gemara. I'm not convinced here, but
then while other people the spinning wage for most people in David's time is actual labor, but for rabbis, the best way for them to pay with their time is to be learning in that way like God.
Oh, very good. So Ezra says that what might be an indication of this, right, of this type of read is the cistern case, which is, what does the cistern case tell you? That the rabbis contribute to society through Torah. And therefore, in things which are unrelated to Torah, and Torah doesn't help, meaning Torah doesn't help you get water, they need to contribute. But we can't expect them to contribute their time because that's the resource that they have. So if it's money, they can pay for water. But if it's time, they're potter, right? Because, yes, right, that we could read it into that line in the Gemara, yeah. Oh, very good. So now Yonatan says, wait a second. Once you start playing this game, and you say that it's not really about security, it's more about us wanting the Talmidei Chachamim to utilize their time for Torah, then why is it limited to security tax? Shouldn't it be expanded to a lot of other types of taxes? Should it? Very good. And what's the answer? Where is it expanded? So there are two places in the Gemara that might indicate that Yonatan is right. One is the psukim we haven't gotten to yet, which is, well, we haven't gotten to a few of them, but definitely which of the Gemaras here goes most radically in his direction? The Ezra one. Very good, Ezra. So we have to talk about this tomorrow. Is the psukim in Ezra seem to present a totally different perspective on this sugya? Yeah? Very good. And what's the other part of the Gemara? Rami? Adam? You weren't raising your hand. Adam? Okay, so I'll throw it in and then I'll take your question. The Rebbe Gemara. Right? Remember the Rebbe Gemara? Is that about security tax? No. Right? Meaning, there are indications in the Gemara that this is much more expansive than security. Okay. I'll take your question in a second, Adam. Because we're running out of time, let me just make it clear. Tomorrow, if you haven't yet, after 50 minutes of us doing this, realized what needs to be done, I want you to go back to the Gemara, right? If you haven't looked at the Psukim in Ezra and Hosea to figure out what claim they seem to actually be making in the Gemara, then do that. Because you have to do that, right? Because you have to realize that every time you check the drush out, the Gemara may be introducing a different claim. And before we figure out what the Gemara wants from us, we've got to figure out what it's actually saying. Okay? If you have finished doing that already, I don't know where all of you are. It sounds like some of you have at least done this. Okay? Then what I want you to do is I want you to look at the Rishonim that I want you to look at the sugya are, okay, eventually, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Rush, Mordechai, Chassam Sofer. These are the sheets that I want to get. The Rambam is in your Rambams, and you can find which one's from the Ein Mishpat. The Mordechai is in the back of your Gemara. The Rush is in the back of your Gemara, specifically focusing on Halacha Chavav and Chavtet. Don't worry, I'll send this out to you, right? The Chassam Sofer and the Ramban, you can both find on Svaria, on the top of Cherem and Aleph, right? Or you can find it in the front of the Beit Midrash, so you can look there. I'll try to get it for you, but I want it, right? I don't want you to be overwhelmed by sources. This is like my end goal of what I want you to get at. But before we see them inside, I want you to see what things they're dealing with. We're going to see that some of the questions they're going to deal with are, does it make a difference if it's a tax that is by city, right? Like the king says you owe $1 million and now you divide it up yourself, or a head tax? Are those different? Right? I want you to start thinking why there might be a conceptual difference between those two types of taxes. Okay? The Rambam, you're going to see, discusses half these halachot in Hilchot Shchenim and half of them in Hilchot Talmud Torah. I want you to start thinking about why that might be and which halachot he puts where. Okay? the Chasam Sofer deals with the question that Yehonatan had already last week, which is, are all walls created equal? What about walls somewhere where they're doing something more than security? What do we do with them? Fine. The last word for today is Adam and Rami. Adam and Rami. Adam. In that order. Good. So the first of the Gemara only says security, but later on the Gemara seems to present bigger theses, and that's why we got to figure out, right, what else might be included here. It's not everything, but it might not only be security, right? There are some limits, like the water case, right? But there might be other things, and that's what we got to figure out, because meaning the Gemara tells us that a water tax that's collected by money, they're chayef. A water tax that's by labor, they're not chayef. It already tells us that it's expansive, but not expansive to everything. Right? And that's what we got to figure out, based on the principles that we tease out from the Gemara. Rami, last word for today. Okay. Maybe, right? Maybe it depends on how quantifiable it is, or how long-term it is, or how renewable this tax is. Could be, right? I agree. Could be.